Hello! You are listening to the Chug and Chat. We are your hosts, Mo.
And Liz.
And today on the pod, we have Sarah McBride, who is the National Press Secretary for the Human Rights Campaign. And holy mackerel, you guys.
Holy fucking shit. She is so amazing.
She's fucking amazing. And so, it's the best interview ever. Should we talk about why we, wanted to reach out to her in the first place?
We're just jumping right in. Feminist Fridays. Let's get
Feminist
down to the
nitty-gritty. Feminist Friday.
That was a chant.
I don't know.
Didn't even have a single melody.
You're right. You're sure right. I am out of melodies today.
You're all out.
Yeah, I'm fresh out. Fresh
Fridays, Feminist Fridays.
So there's this song by this artist named Caswell, and he performed at the club I used to work at, and he sang a song that was like, you would like an ice cream cone, I buy you a ice cream. And for some reason, it made me think of that. So that's like Feminist Fridays. Yeah, it was an unacceptable song.
That pisses me off. Reminds me of this tattoo artist I met once who had an ice cream cone tattooed on his face.
On his face?
On his face.
Are you kidding me right now?
I am not.
That pisses me off.
What a fucking waste of your face.
Oh, Anyway.
Oh, God. All right. Yes, hey, everyone. Hey.
Yeah. So we have had obviously no shortage of issues that we've wanted to cover on this podcast. And in fact, we have found it difficult to be like, okay, and then we'll just tackle all of the patriarchy. We're just going to do all of it in one episode. So we were reading some articles on Facebook and in finding other news that we're not hearing a lot about in mainstream news about trans women of color, and violence that's they've been murdered, they're being beaten. And it's not being covered, and nobody's really talking about it. And I don't mean nobody; I mean the people in our news feeds and in our
mainstream media.
Yeah, and CNN is not covering it. And so we kind of decided that we wanted to get someone to come in and talk about it, and to talk about the narrative of being transgender and what that's like for you in America and how that's changed. After the election and what we can do to help. So we reached out to the Human Rights Campaign, and Sarah immediately responded and was incredibly gracious and very super accommodating and getting a time to work and came in and talked to us about it. So we're really excited for you to hear this interview. This is
We're babbling idiots.
I know. I'm a babbling idiot right now, just even thinking about getting to hear it again. It's incredible. It's incredible what people will talk to you about if you just ask them. We have found it to be incredibly amazing how people just want to come on and talk and share their stories and let us learn from them. So it's just been awesome. So, again, and I know we've said it a zillion times, but thank you, Sarah. We're very lucky to have had you.
Oh, my
Sheesh. I'm losing the ability to speak.
In Pride Month and just, like you said, just making sure that we're the best allies we can possibly be by not only asking questions and being willing to listen to people that have had different experiences than us and people who are different from us, but also just giving yet another space out there in the atmosphere that gives a place for their voices to be heard. These stories need to be told, and we're not delusional that we have millions of listeners, but maybe some people out there are listening, and it's important that we're sharing these things. So I'm equally appreciative that Sarah and so many others have been willing to share their own stories and just talk to us about what they're passionate about and how we can continue to be allies. It just blows me away.
I know.
It's amazing.
I know. The whole rest of the day, like, I was, like, on drugs after we interviewed Sarah. I cleaned my whole house and was super productive and did all kinds of stuff.
We went on a mug hunt.
Oh, yeah, we did. We went on a mug hunt. Ooh, going on a mug hunt.
All this energy went into the mug hunt.
Yeah, it really did. Yeah, which was ended up being futile. The mug hunt was futile.
Like, don't ever try to represent your immense and intense emotions through mug design. Like, it's not going to properly represent how you feel, and it's never going to be quite right. And then you're going to realize you can only buy 75 for $500, and then you're going to be shattered. You're going to be fucking shattered.
I know. Well, I mean, we don't know about that, like, from experience, right? Like, no, we didn't do that. We didn't.
No, yeah. Just saying hypothetically, no, I mean, you don't that, channel like, your energy were, into pointless hobbies and stuff.
If you know? One was to do that, don't.
just don't do it. Anywho.
I think we should talk about this article that's on the Human Rights Campaign's website. It is the page for violence against the transgender community in 2017. And it's the most, I mean, scrolling through it right now, it's just the most staggering, horrible, and absolutely disgusting list of transgender people who have been killed, fatally shot, killed. I mean, all over the country. I mean, there's Mississippi, Misha Caldwell, Mississippi, Jamie Lee Wounded Arrow in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, JoJo Stryker, Toledo, Ohio. I mean, these are names, you know, Tierra Richmond, also known as Kiki Collier, transgender woman of color. She was found dead on the same street as two other transgender women that were killed in 2012 in Chicago.
Oh my God. I have to just say that I really appreciate what HRC, Human Rights Campaign, is doing here, because I've just heard and read more and more about in the last couple of years, like, in particular, like, with all of, like, the school and movie theater violence and shootings, mm-hmm. like, how much more important it is to put the victims of terrible violence and hate crimes into the media instead of, you know, the people who inflict those injuries or deaths, you know, murderers or whatever, blatantly, because, like, that's only feeding their hatred, and it's right. Like, we're all human. We're gonna relate to the human story of, like, someone who's just like us who faced this, like, unspeakable violence. So, like, I really appreciate what they're doing to commemorate these women, and also it's just, like, a smart strategic move, I feel like, from a media perspective, in terms of, like, no, none of the killers are mentioned here.
No, and they shouldn't be.
No.
They absolutely shouldn't be. And you're absolutely right. I mean, it's glorifying the people who commit the crimes and not those who are innocently, you know, who are completely taken from us.
Yeah. Yeah. Can we read some, like, should we read some of the other names?
Sure.
What's the appropriate way, like, for us to share,
I don't know,
some of these?
I have no idea. I mean, I'll just share exactly how HRC did it. China Doll Dupree, 31, black transgender woman, was shot and killed in New Orleans on February 25th. She was a much-loved performer in the ballroom community who was visiting friends and family in New Orleans at the time of her death, so she wasn't even at home. Sierra, oh my gosh, I don't know how to say this last name, McElveen, 26, a transgender woman of color, was stabbed to death in New Orleans on February 27th, so 2 days after that. She did outreach for the homeless community. As of February 28th, 2017, HRC has tracked at least 9 murders of transgender people in Louisiana since 2013.
I was like, that's so interesting that they said that there, because I was just wondering, as you were reading that, like, just hearing New Orleans twice even, it's like, you know, seeing Louisiana on this list a bunch, you know, it's like...
It is on this list
a bunch. It is also, yeah, I mean, it's also really highlighting the places where more blatant violence is common, so I'm glad they put this kind of statistics to it, not even though it's horrific. Oh my God. Okay, how do you say this next name on here?
Jaquarius, I think?
Jaquarius Holland, 18, was shot to death in Monroe, Louisiana on February 19th. One friend, Chesna Littleberry, told Mike, that Holland was like a younger sister and had helped her learn to accept herself.
I think it's Mike because it's the media outlet, Mike.
Thank you.
No, I looked at it too. I only know that because I clicked on it because it was blue.
It's blue. It's a hyperlink. Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, Kenneth Bostick, 59, was found with severe injuries on a Manhattan sidewalk. He later died of his injuries. Few details about Bostick's life have been reported. He's believed to have been homeless at the time he was attacked.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other trend we obviously have to shed light on, is the amount of homelessness that trans people face and experience. I mean, it's just another unfortunately common thing, and it's not okay. So I'm looking for trends here. It makes this even more alarming than, you know, it is already.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Okay, one more. Cheryl Faulkner, 46, a transgender woman of color, died on May 16th of injuries sustained during an attack on November 30th, 2016 in Charlotte, North Carolina. Police are treating the assault as a homicide. No arrests have been made at this point.
She died on May 16th? Oh, my God. What a horrible... And slowly, like, oh, that's awful.
Like,
oh, that's
slow.
Oh, that's absolutely horrible.
Yeah, that is super horrible.
And then
I wonder, too, like, how many of these people, like, I know we're not supposed to make it about the killers, but it's like how many, like, you know, people have been prosecuted.
I would imagine not many.
Yeah, probably.
I don't know that to be true, though. That's just how, you know, how, if I had to guess, I would guess not many. And then the last one on this list is Kenny McFadden, 27, was found in the San Antonio River on April 9th. Police believe she was pushed into the river, which runs through downtown San Antonio. High school friend McFadden described her to local media as assertive, charismatic, and lovable. No arrests have been made, but police say they have a person of interest in custody.
And that's, like, that's as specific as any of these have gotten, right? Like,
yeah.
They have a person of interest in custody. Like, so I guess that really sheds light on the fact that most of these have not.
Yeah. And I think, like, you know, the message of all of this is get out there and find out what's happening in your own community. Get out there and, you know, find out what's happening. Find out what you're not being told. Find out whose narratives are being kept out of your, like, daily digest of everything, you know, that, you know, like, we have so much going on in the national and, you know, news at the federal government right now. We have so much that's going on, but we have even more that's going on local levels, you know, with people who you live next to. You can be trying to be there for and showing up for. So, anyway.
There's so much more hate, I feel like, towards the trans community, like, in the Trump presidency. So, what a better time during Pride Month and during such a time of hate to do exactly what you just said and get out there and get involved. So,
and when you don't understand something, learn about it instead of, let it scare you. Just because if you are a person who doesn't understand, learn. Listen, learn, ask questions.
Yeah, you dang idiots. I'm just kidding. Okay. So before we bring on Sarah, what do we have coming up here?
Oh my gosh, you guys! We are going to live watch the first episode of Handmaid's Tale.
It's kind of legal. Don't tell anyone.
Oh yeah, don't tell anyone. We're doing that, but we are. Yes. So we're doing it on Tuesday, June 27th at 7 p.m. That is on West Coast time. That is Pacific time.
Pacific time on Tuesday.
Pacific time on Tuesday. So
we're real about, like, our reactions to it live. So
Yeah, how are we doing it? Are we sending the link? I don't actually know how we're doing it. Liz is the tech mind, you guys.
Because of the fact that we need to be slightly discreet, I will not be announcing the exact method at this moment, but just make sure that you say you want to go on the Facebook event, and then I will make sure everybody has the appropriate information.
Yeah. Say you're coming. It'll be super fun. We're actually going to get together some stuff and figure out a cocktail we can make so that we can all drink it together. Anyway, yeah. So, sign up for that. You guys follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. all the things and subscribe. If you've not yet subscribed to the blog and to the pod, do it.
Chuggachug.com.
Yeah. And no and. Just And with that, let's bring on Sarah.
Yeah.
Hello.
You made it.
Hello.
Hello. I want my phone.
Hello. It's so nice to hear your voice. Well, should we go ahead and just jump right in?
Let's do it.
Sure.
Let's do it.
Fantastic. Well, hello, Sarah. We're so excited to have you. Welcome to the pod. I would like to introduce Sarah McBride, the National Press Secretary for the Human Rights Campaign. She's on chat with us today. Hello, pretty lady.
Hello. It's wonderful to be on, pretty lady.
Thank you. Why don't you just tell us a little bit about what exactly you do for the Human Rights Campaign and how long you've been working there and a little bit more about you.
Sure. So the Human Rights Campaign is the nation's largest LGBTQ civil rights organization, and as you mentioned, I serve as your National Press Secretary, which means I get to work with so many of our teams throughout the building that are working on both legal equality but also lived equality for LGBTQ people, work with them to make sure that they're getting their message out there, to make sure that their work is being heard. And then I also get to travel around and to go to the communities and states across the country to join people on the front lines of this movement, state legislatures and city halls, at LGBT events and pride events, to represent the organization and to help them put the quality forward. As a transgender person myself, I'm obviously incredibly invested in making sure that we are pushing equality forward for the transgender part of our community, to make sure that we are addressing the needs of, in many cases, the most vulnerable and the most marginalized within the LGBTQ community, particularly transgender people and transgender people of color. I came out as trans about 6 years ago, 5 years ago, while serving as Pride president at American University. And my coming out was nothing but love and support by the campus community that I represented. But it also it also underscored for me that the privileges that I had of being able to come out and being welcome and be welcomed by my school and my family and my friends, that those should be privileges that those should be given for every person around the world.
Yeah. So that's something that's really, I mean, touching on that is really incredible. And also, like, it makes me reflect on how sad that is, that that's not the experience of,
right.
I would say the majority of people who come out as trans, who come out as gay, who come out, you know, who have to come out as anything, really. And that's the stat that's very devastating that you would have the support. But I'm so happy that you did have that support. And now, using that in your profession to provide support to other stuff, you're really a inspirational person. I'm so excited to be talking to you right now.
Well, I'm excited to talk to you, and I think you're absolutely right that in far too many instances and in far too many places when LGBT people come out, it's not with a broad smile and an open, it's not met with a broad smile and an open arms. It's met with hostility and rejection, with ignorance and fear. And that still needs to change. I think that so often, for those of us who are in more progressive spaces, progressive cities, we forget that for a young gay boy in rural Kansas or a transgender woman of color who has to live on the streets in Los Angeles, that the progress that we've seen in so many ways isn't felt by everyone, that there's a lot of work that continues and that remains for us to do, particularly, again, for transgender people and transgender people of color in particular.
Absolutely. And that's kind of a perfect segue, you know, just not to be cliche, but just for every listener, for myself, you know, we really wanted to talk to you today in part because we ourselves really feel that we aren't always educated in terms of what people are experiencing out there. You know, what are trans women and trans men experiencing when they come out?
in local communities. How is that different for trans women of color? You know, we really have been exploring a lot in feminism and intersectionality, and we truly believe, and really the purpose of this podcast is because we truly believe that feminism should be highly inclusive. And where it starts, I think, is us just understanding more of, you know, some of the issues that everyone faces and you know, maybe doesn't get as much media attention all the time. What do we know? Help us learn.
I think that's a great question. I think it's a question that everyone asks. We have, over the last several years, witnessed incredible progress. We've seen marriage equality become the law of the land nationwide. We have seen unprecedented visibility for the transgender community, transgender people succeeding in areas of life that once thought would be impossible. And that's an incredible thing to witness, and that should give us hope for the kind of change that we can continue to deliver. But as you alluded to, and as I said, there is a lot of work that remains for LGBTQ people in general, and obviously for transgender people in particular. Despite the fact that couples can get married nationwide, LGBTQ people still lack clear and explicit protections from discrimination in employment, in housing, in public spaces, in education, in the majority of states across the country and at the federal level. That means that an LGBTQ person is still at risk of being fired from their job, denied a house, kicked out of a restaurant simply because of who they are. And so I think there's no question that one of the top priorities for our community as a whole is achieving clear, permanent, and explicit non-discrimination protection throughout daily life in every single part of the country. But there's also, on an individual basis, issue by issue, significant disproportionate needs for the LGBTQ community and the trans community in particular. LGBTQ people are far more likely to be living, to be homeless, particularly LGBTQ youth, and that is so often because of family rejection.
Yeah.
Transgender women of color face oftentimes deadly violence simply for walking down the street as the person that they are. And we know that that's because of the oftentimes fatal toxic mix of transphobia, latent homophobia, misogyny, and racism. Because so often those are transgender women of color. And we also are seeing unprecedented attacks over the last several years on transgender rights within state legislatures. Two years ago, we saw about 150 anti-LGBTQ bills introduced in state legislatures across the country. Last year, we saw around 200, including North Carolina's HB2. This year, we saw a high number again, over 130 in 30 states. And in many cases, these are bills that either seek to create a license to discriminate against LGBTQ people more broadly, or in many cases, require affirmative mandated discrimination against transgender people, and particularly transgender kids, to forbid, for instance, transgender students from being able to access restrooms consistent with their gender identity at school. And I think a lot of people don't understand why that issue is so important, why there is so much discussion around bathrooms. It's because in every movement for equal access and civil rights throughout our history, opponents of equality have harped on bathrooms because they know that if they can legislate discrimination in restrooms, it makes it much harder for that marginalized community to go to school, to go to work, to fully and equally participate in public life. Because if I can't use a restroom that makes sense for me, I can't go out of my house for more than 2 hours.
That's terrorism. That's horrible.
It is, you know, legislative bullying, and it is an attempt to legislate transgender people in this instance out of public life.
Yeah.
And that's why we're seeing these bills pop up in states across the country. And now with the Trump administration in office, a federal government that is far less willing to defend the rights of transgender people when they come under attack by city or state government.
And you know, that's a really interesting thing you bring up, and I kind of have two questions about it. One is, you know, because you're seeing these pop up in state legislature, from an HRC perspective, is policy fight more at the state level then? Is it especially, you know, given the Trump presidency, is that more of where the strategy is leaning right now? What would you say about that?
Well, you know, I think there's two aspects to the work that we have to do. One is pushing policy forward wherever we can. And a year ago, that included a number of states and obviously at the federal level within the executive branch, right? With the Obama administration, we were seeing unbelievable progress, particularly recently on trans rights and removing the ban on trans service members and protecting and expanding protections for transgender students and transgender people accessing healthcare. We saw a lot of progress at the federal level.
Yes.
Obviously, with the Trump administration, our efforts to expand equality center now more on pushing it forward at the state level. Oregon just passed much needed legislation to allow transgender people to obtain identity documents that reflect their identities without as much of a burden as before. States like California, Illinois, Delaware, Rhode Island are pushing legislation that seeks to expand and affirm rights for LGBTQ people. But there's also, as I mentioned, a number of states, a majority of states that are considering legislation that attacks transgender rights. And then obviously at the federal level, the Trump administration is undermining and doing a lot of what the Obama administration achieved. So it does require us to be on the defensive more. But throughout all of that, the reality remains that government isn't the only, it's an important part, it's not the only avenue for change. More and more businesses are protecting their employers and their workers. More and more hospitals are adopting LGBTQ inclusive and comprehensive care. More and more families are welcoming LGBTQ loved ones in their homes and in their neighborhoods. And those change and hearts and minds that can continue regardless of who's in the White House. And that's important change to remember. But of course, at the end of the day, LGBTQ people deserve full equality and dignity, regardless of their political state. But at the end of the day, we still need nationwide action.
Yes, absolutely. But I do love to hear that there is still, it feels like, you know, some progress happening, despite the fact that it will be a lot harder to fight policy that's, you know, hindering the rights of LGBTQ. That's great to know that there's still progress being made. You know, I think we both are really curious, but also hesitant to ask, you know, really just what's been happening since the Trump presidency, not to give too much focus to it, but, you know, I mean, I can't but be afraid. And I also recognize I have a lot of privilege and won't be impacted necessarily by all of the terrible things that he's doing, but I'm very, very concerned, you know, so I think we're both really curious just to know what are communities feeling, you know, how can we help people feel that there are still hope and positivity and
yeah,
good things to
make. And, you know, sort of trying to find our place in the movement as white cisgendered women.
And that's right.
Sort of like the genesis of this podcast is how can we, without relying too much on marginalized communities to educate us and to, you know, we want to show up and be like, teach me how to be an ally. That's not, you know, that's
like, this is all about us. Yeah, we don't want that.
Right.
Because it's
not the urge to figure out how to be an ally.
I think
that's a great question. And I think sort of the first step is starting from where you're coming from, which is understanding sort of where you are coming to the issue from, whether you're coming to the issue obviously as a person part of the community, or whether you're coming to the issue as an ally, or including as a person with certain privileges that people in that community don't have. So I think that's an important first step, and it's clear you all are already there. But, you know, I think there are a couple things I'd say. One is obviously to lift up the voices of trans people, to invite trans people on your podcast, to amplify on your individual social media accounts the stories of trans people, and not just the stories of heartache and discrimination, but also the stories of success, the stories of love, the stories of demonstrate sex and gender people cry and laugh just like everyone else.
Yeah.
And that is incredibly important. It's to show up at marches, it's to show up and at town halls, it's to talk to your member of Congress or write your state legislator when an issue around LGBTQ or trans equality come up, make clear that you're watching, if you have an opinion on this, that this issue matters to you as a voter. That is incredibly important because, you know, as powerful as we are as individuals and as a community, we are still, by the numbers, small and need allies to stand up. We need our friends to speak out. And we know when that happens. We know when trans voices are heard and allies stand firm, that we can make the politics of fear and division, of discrimination and misinformation no longer effective. Because we saw that in North Carolina this past election. In a state where Donald Trump won by about 5 points, the state incumbent Republican governor lost. Largely because he targeted transgender people for discrimination, not LGBTQ people for discrimination. And he lost because our voices were heard, because allies said this is not going to stand, because businesses spoke out. And he lost re-election, the only incumbent Republican governor to do so this past election. And that sent a powerful message. And it demonstrated that when we all stand together, when we stand together as LGBTQ people, as people of color, as women, as Muslims, as immigrants, people with disabilities, as folks who live at the intersections of those identities, that we can make the politics of fear fail. And excuse me. And what I would say to feminists across the country, and I probably consider myself a feminist, is that we have to understand as you alluded to that feminism has to be inclusive and intersectional. That at the end of the day, homophobia, transphobia, sexism, and misogyny are all rooted in the same prejudice. Believe that one perception at birth, the sex we are assigned, should dictate who we are, who we love, how we act, and what we do. But only when we understand that, only when we combat all of those isms and phobias, will we be able to build a world where you can be gay, you can be trans, you can be successful, you can be independent, you can be strong, you can be anything that this society says is mutually exclusive with being a woman or being feminine. It can be any or all of those things and still be seen, still be valued, and still be respected as the equal people that we all are.
Yes. Yes. Oh my gosh.
That was like the most amazing. I have the biggest chills in my hands are cold. What a beautifully expressed moment. Yes.
National press secretary.
Right? Absolutely.
Well spoken.
One of the things I really appreciate about what you all are doing is that in pushing back on the Trump administration and talking about the action about feminism, that you're doing it in a way that helps to expand our understanding of feminism and expand our understanding of what it means to be a feminist to a place where we're really genuinely embracing everyone and centering it on the most marginalized and most vulnerable.
Absolutely.
So kudos to you all.
Absolutely. Oh, thank you.
Well, thanks for being here.
Thank you. Thank you so much for giving us the time and the space to learn from you and to be able to continue to try to do the work that we're trying to do. It's been, I know for both Liz and I mean, immediately after the election, it was like, okay, drop everything. We need to figure out how to make some art out of this. We're both artists. I was a theater major in college and Liz is a vocal performer. And we like had to make something out of it. And this is sort of, you know, it's led us into a place that I was not even at all anticipating. And it's led us to talk to you. So I just want to thank you so much for coming on. And I guess with that, we should ask our last question. We ask everybody, and we try to do this every week because I do forget, but we try to do it every week. Who's your king of the week this week? Who's really giving you life this week?
Who is giving me life? Well, it could be someone who's living or for a past week.
Yes.
Anyone. Well, this week is the first full week of June, which means it's the first full week of 5 months for the LGBTQ community.
Yes.
And there are two women that are giving me life today, this week, and every week, frankly. And it's actually Sylvia Rivera and Marsha Johnson, who were two trans women of color, who have both since passed away, but they helped launch the modern LGBTQ rights movement. They were two of the people who initiated the Stonewall riots in New York City, that initiated the modern movement. And so today, as we mark June as 5 months of the LGBTQ community, I'm thinking about those two trans women of color who were at the forefront of this movement and whose shoulders we all stand on.
Well, thank you so much. We'll definitely be thinking of them too. That has to be the best suggestion we've ever had for Queen of the Week. So
definitely, this month of all months, it's important to remember their contributions.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Sarah. We really, really appreciate this so much. We can't wait until it airs. We'll let you know.
Great. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, and enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you. You too.
Take care, Sarah.
Take care.
All right.
Bye-bye.